in the fabled land of Northern California. Nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
Wow, that felt weird saying that, because like for anybody who knows, it's been 2 weeks since we've done one, because we're on this new schedule.
Yeah.
This new 2 week schedule. And lots happened in the last 2 weeks. We just spent like an hour and 10 minutes just talking about the various personal things. But it felt weird. Like my routine is, you know, me and Mike, we discuss again, like we've said before, what we're going to talk about, kind of, if we have a topic. And then I have my little clock timer thing that I use to, so I can keep time. And so Mike counts us in to when we're going to start. I push the button on my timer thing, which is on a tablet right by me. And then I'm supposed to say, you know, the start of this, the welcome to the Xenial Chronicles.
Yeah.
And I literally had a like millisecond of like, oh, fuck, what am I supposed to say? I haven't said this in 2 weeks. Oh, what's my line? And then it came out, and I'm like, wait, is that how I start these? And it's only been 2 freaking weeks. It's because I'm older now. Which, by the way, I have some announcements I want to make personally. I know I'm doing all the talking right now. All you're hearing is Mike laughing. First announcement I want to make is
that, I just know where things are going, man.
Oh yes, things are going. You know where things are going. First announcement yes. I want to make is that this last week, because we're on the 1st of August today, doing our recording here. So there's a couple of announcements to do with this. This last week, my wife and I celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary. That's right.
Yep.
20 years.
Congratulations. You were there. Milestone. I was there.
You were there.
I was
there.
You weren't
where you should have been, but you were there.
Somebody had to man the guest book, okay?
If I was to do it over right now, if we were the type of people that did like a vow renewal thing, and this would have been the year to do that. Although next year would be good too, only because I have a thing for multiples of seven. There's a reason, by the way. I have a
thing yes.
For multiples of seven. Do you know yes. what that reason is?
I don't quite remember.
I'll explain later.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll explain later off air, because it is a little something that I don't let everybody know.
It's like completely. A personal thing. Yeah.
Very much a personal thing. So, if I was to do a vow renewal at any point, I would change up the lineup of the people standing next to me, because, you know, the groomsmen and the best man and all that. The best man would still stay the same. It'd still have to be our internet guy, Rob, only because he's been my friend since 1994. So he beat you by a few years. And
maybe a few, yeah.
And I did name one of my children after him. I do not have a child named Mike, so I mean, and I wouldn't, because it doesn't fit the name scheme for our family. But yeah, I named a kid after him, so he still gets to be the one to stand next to me. And I believe that your wife would still be a part of the wedding party on my wife's side, because she was actually, if I remember correctly, she was the maid of honor, wasn't she? Was she the maid of honor, or was she just one of the bridesmaids? I don't remember for sure.
Are you asking me?
Yeah. She was in the wedding. You know that, right? Tasha was in the wedding.
Yeah, but I wouldn't know which maid she was 20 years ago. We weren't even dating.
You weren't dating, but come on, admit it. You had a thing for her.
I didn't know which. Again, 20 years ago.
But she
why don't you ask, you know, your wife, sir? She's in the house.
She is, but she's downstairs and trying to stay away while I'm doing this.
Right.
Anyway, point being, she would still be there. She would still be there. But one of my wife's sisters would probably be the maid of honor at this point. The one who lives in our home, just because they are very close. But next to Rob, our internet guy, as my best man, the only groomsman that I would put up there at this point would be you, sir. You'd be in your proper place at this point.
Ah, okay.
So there is that. Of course, we have nobody to officiate it properly. Maybe we could get the guy who officiated your wedding to do it. That would be funny.
You know what? It would be a lot more sober, and it'd be a lot more in control. I'll tell you that right now.
probably. Yeah. I can see that. He wasn't the drunkest person at your wedding by any stretch of the means.
No.
One of your groomsmen far exceeded him. and me and announcer guy Scott were doing whatever we could to try to rein in that groomsman.
Oh my God. And failing. he's still pissed on the
Yeah. But anyway.
He's still pissed on the best man's truck. God. That was a great wedding.
I had to leave early due to some family. I missed a lot of the fun, but yeah. I can't even say it was enjoyable with the date that I took, because he's no longer a part of the program. Yes, I had a guy that was my date to your wedding, if you remember correctly. It was my wife's sister's boyfriend at the time. But anyway, and he's no longer in the picture, so
yeah.
But anyway, so yes, we celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary in the truest fashion that we could. We had I'm sure you're still familiar with it, Rico's Pizza.
Oh yes, yes,
we had a giant Rico's Pizza for our 20th anniversary, and we didn't tell anybody really that it was our anniversary. There's a few people who knew, but we didn't tell anybody because that's just kind of how we do things.
Wait, Rico's? I haven't seen a Rico's in years. Rico's is still around?
There's one left in Yuba City. Only one.
That's the only one left? That's like the there's none in the Sacramento area at all?
That's the only one that I know of. There may be one in Sacramento I don't know about, and I will freely admit that I don't know about it. But
wow.
The only one I know of is the one in Yuba City. And, of course, you always get the giant pizzas from them.
Oh, yes.
The family or the party size. You never get the smaller ones because you want that, like, 10-inch long, you know.
That's the longer, yeah, like, yeah. The Rico's, like 13
that's, inch long piece yeah, of pizza.
That's the experience. You go to Rico's for the giant-ass pizza.
Yes. Very yes. much so. Mm-hmm. But I also want to point out that For us Xennials, one of the most famous fictional Xennial characters in existence actually turned 41 yesterday. Now, admittedly, it's a fictional character, so he doesn't turn any real age. But technically, yesterday, this fictional character would have turned 41, which is, by the way, the same age I am now.
Yeah, that's since true.
I turned 41 sometime in the last month. Now, the fictional character that I'm referring to is, of course, who? Do you know?
I don't have a fucking clue, no.
That would be Harry Potter, who's
Harry Potter was, oh, that's right. Didn't they put his birth date in, like, in one of the books?
Well, yes, it's a key feature in the first book that his birth date is July 31st, and that he was born in 1980.
Holy shit.
So, yes, he is 41, which, by the way, that tells you I was born in 1980, which we've said before on here. And if I said 41, you could just do the simple math, because that is simple math, right? But, yes, Harry Potter would have...
It's okay, James. You're not really doxing yourself or anything. You're good.
I know. but anyway, part of this mention is, of course, because... I like to give certain people, I don't expect people outside of my house to remember things like my anniversary or specifically my birthday. It's one of those things that I don't tell people about. It's not set up on Facebook to let people know. And I don't let anybody post anything on Facebook because I want to know who remembers the day just for remembering the day. I'm not angry at people who don't remember the day because it's not about being angry. It's about me knowing who keeps that in their memory. Who has that stored there? Because in my mind, if you have that stored in your memory and you remember it regularly, I'm more present in your mind, and that means you're more concerned with me, and that just tells me where I need to rank you in, like, who I'm going to try to save in an apocalypse situation.
Right.
Like, there's a whole swath of people that I'm like, screw you. You don't know what my birthday is. I haven't seen it. But there's the people who do know what my birthday is that, like, I'm saving you. Why? You know my birthday. Oh, so come on. Come live in our little, you know, enclave where we're safe from all the, you know, whatever is causing this apocalypse, whatever that apocalypse might be. So So what I do like to do instead, not really thinking that an apocalypse is going to happen. That's just the amusing story to tell people that gets the chuckles and laughs like you just did.
Yeah.
No, people, I am not prepping for an apocalypse. I don't actually believe one will happen. It might.
Are you sure we're not like starting the middle? We're not like smack dab in the middle one right now.
We might.
That was like the theme of last year was the apocalypse.
But yet we can still go and get Rico's Pizza. So the apocalypse didn't fully happen.
Rico's Pizza, just like cockroaches, both will survive the apocalypse.
Something like that. Yes.
Yes.
especially because they don't have dine-ins, so you have to take out everything. It's perfect.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Oh yeah, they don't, huh?
Yeah, it's too. It's
well,
too,
that's why they survived. It's, you just knew what you would. You just knew what to expect with them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just like all the delivery places did great. We're like, we already know how to deal with this.
Yeah. Little Caesars? Oh, yeah. We're fine. We're good. Just,
we have machines that you can. There's a Little Caesars right near here that actually has a drive-thru.
Oh, that's dope.
Drive-thru pizza. It's great. But anyway.
Do you like drive up to the box and then input your number and it opens up the tray for you and you don't even see anybody?
No, it's a full drive-thru
robot
thing.
Shit. Oh, oh,
it's
really?
It's a full drive-thru thing. Yeah, it's got the full drive-thru window. Although inside the building, it has those trays. You can just input your stuff and get your thing out of there. It's got those you know racks with the trays in it, which is actually there was a book that was written in the early 80s. It was about the kind of the future of the internet and where this writer saw very geek writer. Like hardcore geek writer, and where he saw America going, that America would end up eventually being owned by various corporations instead of the government, and the government would only be a very small entity while the corporations would own all the big swaths of land and make their own laws and their own rules and stuff. And then the internet was going to be a whole different thing where people would actually, it was actually called the metaverse. People would show up to be there with avatars. And depending on how your avatar looked, depending on how much money or how good a programmer you were, whatever. And then there was this other story built into it about ancient religions and all kinds of freaky things like that. It's a very, very good book. One of my favorite books. It's called Snow Crash. The author is Neal Stephenson.
I'm going to have to look it up.
Really smart guy. I can probably give you one of the like four copies that I have of that book.
Why do you have multiple copies?
Because it's literally like one of my... It's my top three favorite book. My three favorite books of all time are Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, mm-hmm. Armor by John Steakley, and Snow Crash. Oh. These are like my three favorite books ever. I've read Snow Crash like at least 15 times. I love this book so much. The lead character is half Japanese, half black, and his name is Hero Protagonist.
God Gojo. Damn it.
Hero Protagonist.
Okay, man, if you're gonna make like outlandish yet still somewhat realistic predictions about the future, you need to take some fucking time to actually come up with a creative name.
It's Hero, like H-I-R-O.
As soon as you said it, I knew exactly how it was spelled.
No, this is actually super creative for what is going on with the story. I mean, this story is amazing. It's the first time that the term avatar was used to coin to describe a representation in an online universe of a person's appearance or a person's, you know, identity.
Wow.
First time that was ever used, and it was used as a result for later stuff because of this book. There is a program that the guy uses in this book where he tasks a government satellite to give him a view of real-time satellite view of what's going on. He called the program Earth. This was the inspiration for Google Earth. Like, it literally inspired Google Earth. The people who did the program Google Earth said Snow Crash inspired them to do this. It was a novel way ahead of its time in its description of what an online community could look like. It got a bunch of things wrong, but it has served as a benchmark for what the way some of these things have been built and created. And it's an amazing book. Some of the things don't entirely work because of, again, for the time frame it was written, and our technology is so far beyond that. I mean, the things we can do with a simple cell phone are way more than they were doing with the best computers in that book. But the tone of the book, it's a cyberpunky type thing before cyberpunk was even really a thing. It kind of was one of the initial starters of it. It's amazing, amazing.
Interesting. Book. I do want to check this out.
It starts with the main character. His job at the time, he's a pizza delivery driver, which you think isn't a big deal until you realize that all the pizza chains in the entire United States are owned by the mafia. And if you don't deliver the pizza on time, the mafia will basically kill you.
Jesus Christ. And
these are super powered sports cars that have that actually have slots in them where the driver pulls up to the outside of the pizza place that where the pizzas are made, and a machine, robots, put the pizza in these slots. He never interacts with people at all. The pizza gets put in the slots. He's given a delivery time. He runs and delivers it, and they exit from the slots when they're there to be delivered. No interaction physically at all.
Wow.
So when Domino's a few years ago came out with their self-driving pizza car that had the slots in it, I'm like, that's the deliverator's car. That, except like not nearly souped up as much. And the first chapter is him trying to deliver a pizza that's late to be delivered. And so he has to do whatever he possibly can to deliver it on time, or the mafia is basically going to kill him.
Holy and shit.
It makes being a pizza driver sound like the sexiest, most awesome fucking job ever. And it's like, this is a book you need to read. And so there's also some ancient religion stuff added in, some weird shit like that. There's it's so much weirdness packed into one book, but it's freaking amazing novel. And that novel even knew that at some point or another, we needed delivery drivers. We needed the delivery of pizza with robots to make sure that we could get through any apocalypse. But anyway, back to the original point, shit. which is insane.
That is insane. I love that general concept. I'm gonna have to read this book.
You do need to read this book.
I need to read this book.
But anyway, back to the point, which is that I monitor who does and doesn't remember my birthday, and this year Mike forgot again.
I did.
And I say again because it's not the first time, and this is something that I know you have certain things that stick in your brain, and then when they do, it's hard sometimes to get other things in your brain. And I get that about you. I know that's how you work. I know that I receive texts from you sometimes like, what? And then you respond back with me tired, me not working right, or me brain not working, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes when I has the dumb, I cannot use full sentences properly. It's impossible. I try and I can't. So I just caveman speak because it's easier.
I'm trying to find it.
Looking for it.
Yes. God damn it. Where are you?
Man, in the middle of all this, now you just made me hungry for pizza. And now the thing that got me more than anything is the fact that everything you start mentioning about all the pizza and then sci-fi, yeah. It really made me think, where the hell are those dehydratable pizzas that were supposed to be here in 2015 from Back to the Future?
Yes.
Like, I know that the hoverboard isn't really a thing either, but I mean, dehydratable pizzas are so much, you'd figure that they would be so much easier to do.
Or that microwave thing from the Fifth Element where you just put something in and chicken. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be
great. So yeah, it was yesterday, where you were asking today to do the not do the podcast yesterday and do it today.
I know, like, I legit forgot that I was supposed to that we weren't doing it until today.
Yeah, I was like, dude, we're supposed to do it on Sundays. It's not Sunday. It's like, oh, so we're good then. Yes, I wasn't entirely positive. And then here's the text: me forgot time. Me tired and had long week.
It was a very long week.
That's what happened. So I get that. But even though I know it's a thing that you do forget the day of my birthday, that's fine. I'm not hurt by it, but I am going to give shit by it because I know you have a little bit of, or shit for it because I know you have a little bit of guilt. You have that little bit of guilt. So I'm just going to give you a bunch of crap for it because that's what I do in general.
It's
anyway.
Kind of a thing.
It is. And if I'm giving you crap about something, that means it's an okay thing. If I'm not talking to you about it, that actually is when I'm upset about it.
No, that means, that's real shit. I understand that entirely.
So, I mean, just this is me calling it out to the five listeners who actually listen to this. That Mike forgot my birthday again, which, by the way, I have in the last, what, 12 years since we started hanging out again and doing stuff again, I just want to let you know, not only have I never forgotten Mike's birthday, but I've even thrown him a party once or twice. I just want to let you know.
You have, and they were wonderful parties. They were very enjoyable.
You know, how can a month have an idea? But anyway, one of my favorite jokes. But yes. Above all of that happening this last week, there is something else that happened this last week, and I do want to share a little bit. First of all, the fact within the last 2 weeks, I finally got my second COVID shot.
Good.
As did my wife.
Wonderful.
By the way, just so people know, just a little disclaimer here. We've done a lot of COVID disclaimers. One final disclaimer. Saying that you've had your COVID shot or even being asked whether you've had your COVID shot is not a violation of HIPAA. If you really want to understand what a violation of HIPAA is, please look HIPAA up or actually talk to somebody who's had to study HIPAA in school. All right, like me or your wife, for instance.
I was going to say, yeah, I myself am not a medical professional, so I cannot speak for this.
I haven't been paid for it yet, but I will eventually be something of a medical professional.
He is currently pursuing a career in medicine. Let's say, profession.
In the medical profession, not necessarily in medicine. I am a doctor. I'm just going to be on the bookkeeping side of things.
He's not technically like a virologist, but believe me, I can say as someone who is married to someone who has the job he is searching for.
Who is also not a virologist.
Who is also not a virologist, but I will tell you what, she's got access to a fuck ton of medical information. It's very nice to be able to look something up and realize what something actually is. Rather than scare yourself with potential cancer because WebMD told you that having an itch somewhere meant something else, right? WebMD like,
but anyway, point here is asking people about their vaccination status, requiring to know people's vaccination status. That is not a HIPAA thing at all.
Nope.
Just so we're clear on that.
You don't have to
give that information because there is, at least currently, until there's a law put in place to say that you have to. You can say, I refuse to give that information. That's personal information. You can say that, but don't cite HIPAA because you're wrong. HIPAA does not count in this situation. But we got our second vaccinations. Of course, my wife, again, felt absolutely no side effects from it. I had a day where I felt a little run down and about 2 days of arm pain, and then I was fine. But we found out that during that time period that our eldest son's school was the schools have been told, at least so far they've been told, things haven't changed yet, but I feel that they will be changing before school starts up again.
Yeah.
So far they've been told that they do not have to enforce masks, but they should, and they can make the decisions technically themselves. This is so far what schools have been told. However, I think that's going to change in the next week or two, but we'll see what happens. So my oldest son's school informed us that they were not going to be enforcing masks at all.
Right.
Mainly due to parental complaints about it. It's a school in a very small community. So the parents have been complaining about how horrible it is, how their kids feel imprisoned.
This is oppression.
They can't have normal expression and conversation with each other, yada, yada, yada. They can't have the normal high school experience. A load of bullshit, but whatever.
Yeah.
Comes down to they're not going to be forcing it. So we sat down and had a discussion with our son and were able to finally talk him into going to get his vaccines, because we believe that regardless of the fact that they are children, they still have a right to have an opinion if they're able to have an opinion. And so we gave him his options in it. He did agree to go do it. We admittedly told a little bit of a fabrication to him in that he had to go get one shot. We did not make it clear that he had to have two until we were at the doctor. So a little bad on us. But hey, we're trying to do something for his health and benefit that is something he does not want to do. But he did. He got the shot. A couple days of arm pain, which he was mad at me about. You know, why didn't you tell me it was going to hurt like this? Because you probably wouldn't have got it if I told you your arm was going to hurt.
Yeah.
But it didn't hurt when he got the shot, right? No. Okay, then. But he ended up getting his shot as well. And so we are on the path for the for hopefully full vaccination for the whole household, which, I mean, here's what it comes down to, people. Again, we're not virologists. We've talked about this so many different times.
Yeah.
But just the key to take away from this is, even if you're vaccinated, you can still carry the virus. You can still spread the virus. The only thing that being vaccinated does is it helps your body fight the virus off. So hopefully you won't get as sick with it and it won't be life-threatening for you.
Exactly.
That's what it does. It preps your body to fight it off. Okay. But you can still carry it. You can still spread it, which is why even though I'm fully vaccinated and the state has said we can go around without masks if you're fully vaccinated, there are members of my household who are not fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So I will be masking at the very minimum until they are all vaccinated, and even possibly beyond that,
yeah.
I may continue being masked up, because the simple thing is I don't want to find out that I carried COVID to somebody else, either the original variant or the Delta variant, regardless of which one it is. I don't want to find out that I was a carrier. I gave it to somebody else and that other person died because of it, because I would feel like all I needed to do was to wear a goddamn mask and I wouldn't have possibly killed somebody.
Yeah.
And that's my thought. It's not about me and what it could do to me. It's about the other people that I could affect. It's the same reason why I'm not driving on the freeway at 85 miles an hour. I'm not driving anywhere drunk, or I'm not carrying a loaded gun around with me everywhere, or even have loaded guns in my house. I don't even have any guns in my house, but the simple fact is it's
why I don't even own a gun, let alone many guns.
Yes. Very good. Very good.
Yes.
I don't even own a gun, let alone many guns. You have to emphasize the A.
A gun. Yeah, you're right. Yes. You're right.
Yes. Very good, though. For people who don't know what that is, learn your comedy movies, please.
Yes.
But anyway, point being here, it's not about you necessarily. It's about being a part of a community and trying to make a community work. And that's why all of our children will be getting vaccinated, so that they can be safe, but also hopefully so other people will as well, so they can see that anybody can go and get the vaccine. It's really not that bad. And honestly, yes, some of the effects are bad. Some people I've experienced some people having some of the really bad side effects, you know, multiple days of flu-like symptoms. But I guarantee you, even some of the worst side effects that you can have, other than like the people that have really bad, like, you know, allergic reaction side effects, but mm-hmm. some of the worst, the majority of the worst side effects that most people are having from the vaccines, still not as bad as actually getting COVID itself and having to find yourself in the hospital alone with no family able to see you. You don't want to be in that situation, and you don't want to put other people in that situation. At least I think you don't. If you do, you have a different problem and you have a different doctor you need to go see, one that specializes in one of those things that starts with a P and an S and a Y and a C and an H. See that doctor, because you got some other issues. If you want to infect other people, there may be some other problems you need to discuss and get medicated for. I'm just saying. Unless you don't want to discuss and get medicated for, and then, you know, whatever. Go live your you know, psychotic life. It's all right. Anyway, point being, we got one down of the kids. We got both the parents down. We're working our way through it. But I was really proud of my son. He's not a fan of shots at all. Last time he had to have any kind of needles of any kind, he had to be put out for some dental work, and he had to have an IV in his arm. And literally, he comes out of recovery from the work. They bring him back awake. We're done. We're driving home. He's still having bleeding in his mouth from the various dental work things that they did. Because even after you get the work done, you know, there's still some bleeding happening and whatnot. It doesn't matter that he's got blood in his mouth. It doesn't matter any of the other issues or even any, you know, his mouth is completely numb still from all the pain stuff. He literally spends a half an hour from like downtown Sacramento. You're like the UC Davis Hospital is in downtown Sacramento.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And you have to navigate all those streets to get back to I-5, right?
Yeah.
So from there, all the way back to where the former Arco Arena. He is yelling at me the entire time about the IV that they had stuck in his arm and the Band-Aid that's now on the IV.
Oh my gosh.
They stuck a needle in my arm. They stuck a needle in my arm.
Hey, so meanwhile, his mouth is bleeding.
Yes. That's all he cared about was the fact that they had a damn needle in his arm. And I'm just kind of chuckling to myself. Like, I know, bud. I know. And he's just yelling at me about it. I'm like, I know, you're all right now. I know. And I'm like, I'm in the middle of traffic. This child is just screaming. This is many years ago, but still, this is like, you know, you've seen those videos of the kid coming off of like the gas from dental stuff, and they say like the weirdest, craziest stuff. This is that kid who's still somewhat groggy from being put under, screaming at me about a needle in his arm. So he is not a fan of getting any needlework done. And I think even to the point, he's also not very good with any kind of pain thing. So this is not a kid who's like, I hate needles, but I got a bunch of tattoos. No, he's not going to be getting tattoos.
Right. No, he would. No,
his pain tolerance is literally zero. So the shot didn't hurt him, but the arm ache afterwards is. But the fact that he actually went through with getting the shot, I was super, super proud of him for doing, because yeah, needles are not his thing. He about squeezed my hand off in the process of doing it, but you know, proud of him for having gotten it done.
Yeah,
he did a fantastic job trying to do the right thing, because he's been one of the kids that's been the most worried about the virus and about going out, and he's been good about keeping his mask on everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. Which most kids I wouldn't say most kids, there are many kids that have had problems with it. He's been very good about keeping up on all that stuff, and so you know, he didn't want to have to go to school and worry, and we didn't want him to have to go to school and worry. So,
right.
You know, this is happening. And again, you may find that the things are going to change. They're already changing in the local counties, that they're starting to require masks indoors again, because of all the things going, it's going to keep changing and people will be prepared for it. And if you haven't been vaccinated yet, seriously, for yourself, for the people around you, I really recommend doing it. It's, you know, the way we eradicated many other diseases in the past is by people going out in mass and getting vaccinated. Polio's gone because of the fact that they pushed the vaccination as heavily as they did. Let's try to get with the program, people. Anyway,
I did see a meme. Not a problem. I did see a meme to kind of supplement what you're talking about the other day. That was great. It was this guy talking to his kid saying, "Man, it looks like this new variant, this Delta variant, is about as spreadable as chicken pox." And their kid says, "What's chicken pox?" And the response was, "Well, see, there was this vaccine."
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this is.
In many ways, and I can tell you from experience.
Yeah.
Chicken pox as a kid can be bad or can be okay. Chicken pox as an adult is fucking awful.
Well, it's devastating. It can kill you. It can kill you. I believe the chicken pox virus is what starts shingles, doesn't it?
It can start shingles, which is something I have to worry about later. I got chicken pox at the age of 18. I can tell you,
wow.
I was covered head to toe.
I got chicken pox when I was like, I think I was like six. Yeah, you get chicken pox at school from a kid who's got chicken pox. There's another guy got chicken pox. Yeah.
Most people get it at that age. Yeah. I did not. I got it at 18 and I was
but
covered
at the same time,
head to toe.
Here's the funny thing. They didn't have a vaccine for chicken pox when we were kids.
No, they did not have a vaccine for chickenpox. But if you really want to see what vaccines can do to help out, check out the story of, I'm going to say it was Roald Dahl, right?
Oh, Matilda and the Twits and James and Giant Peach, that guy?
Yeah. Let me make sure that it's really him. Let's see.
Processing.
I think it was him. I'm Googling.
Recalculating.
I'm Googling, yes.
Googling.
Yes. Check out the story of Roald Dahl and his daughter, Olivia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to look this up.
I'll just make it quick here. Olivia died of encephalitis caused by measles, which is a side effect of people getting measles. Basically, once people get measles, if the encephalitis starts, basically you're dead. There's no way to cure it at that point.
Oh, wow.
And there's no way to know if any person getting measles might get the encephalitis. It's just they're fine, and then within 24 hours, they get the encephalitis and die.
Holy
encephalitis,
shit.
By the way, is fluid on the brain. It basically just fills the brain with fluid and crushes the brain, basically, and you die.
Oh, my God.
This is not something that needs to be worried about, because we have the MMR vaccines, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines.
Yeah.
The kids are given at early ages, of course, when you don't have people who are anti-vaxxers to stop the kids from getting these things. And So research Roald Dahl's kid, Olivia, and what happened with her and his opinions on vaccines, and realize that those are things that we don't have to worry about anymore, because people bought into vaccines and that they were given across the board to everybody. Just think about it. Anyway, we're going to take our break now. When we come back, sadly, we have some more sad things to talk about. It's following a trend recently of musicians who have left us.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about a couple of those when we come back, especially the two most recent and kind of, I hate to weigh them together, but probably for many people our age, two of the most influential ones to have lost.
Absolutely iconic. Yeah.
So when we come back, we'll talk about those for a bit. And I think that'll be it. So we'll see you in just a minute.
All right.
Hey, friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we're back, everybody.
All right.
And so, again, we've in the last few weeks with this, last month with this weird new schedule that we're doing, we have touched on the various musicians that have passed away recently, and we touch on this every time there's like a group of people. It seems to happen that a group of celebrities pass away at the same time.
It really does. I was like, who's the first thing I was thinking when I heard about all those other ones was who's the third? And then
more than that,
they kept coming. Yeah.
Yes. Like literally an entire band with a beatbox section, basically.
Yeah.
All happened at once.
Yeah. A beatbox section.
Literally. Jesus. I mean, but that's the thing is, this has been a really weird kind of a lot of times when you have the celebrity losses, they'll come at, you know, somebody from the acting world, somebody from the music world, somebody from like the art world or something, you know, those kinds of things. They'll be different from different areas of celebrity life. But it's like, these are all, with the exception of Biz Markie being a rap artist, these are all basically rock musicians that are all kind of, I've all kind of died at the same time. It's almost like a band is being assembled for the afterlife.
I will tell you this, at least like regardless of genre, a lot of these people are very groundbreaking people in their own respects. Right. Everybody that I've seen so far that has gone are part of something major because they did it different than anybody else.
Yes.
And it's irreplaceable as far as the legacy that they leave.
Yeah, they're definitely parts of iconic, especially the last three have been major parts of iconic groups.
Yeah.
We'll start with, I think, probably the least famous of the three, and that would be, I don't even remember the guy's name, but he's the guy who played violin for the band Kansas.
Oh, that's right. Oh my gosh. And I feel it's disrespectful to not get his name. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Hold on. I'll get it. Who is it? Robbie Steinhardt.
Yes.
Yeah, Robbie. Wait, he was co-lead vocalist as well.
Yes.
So yeah, he died on July 17th.
And see, again, this is a guy that like he was a part of multiple iconic songs.
Yes.
What we had, Dust in the Wind is being one of the biggest ones.
Definitely.
But more importantly, the song that I think sticks with a whole generation of TV watchers would have to be I can't even think of the name of the song now. From Supernatural show. Carry On My Wayward Son, right?
Isn't that Kansas? Carry On Wayward Son is Kansas. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
We're talking iconic music.
Some of the best fucking guitar. I know we're talking about the violinist here, but I mean, that guy was that whole chorus, man. It's so good.
So we're talking again, somebody who was iconic in the field of whose band has songs that literally, I mean, we're talking these songs stretch through multiple generations of music love, and that's, I mean, it's big. You move from him to I believe the next one that passed was the drummer right? He wasn't he the next one that was that died?
Yeah, he would be the next one because we talked about the other three. Why episode we did, we talked about Biz, and then we talked Biz, about the two numbers from Cinderella, right?
Cinderella. Yes. Yeah. So the next one that would be up would be Joey Jordison, former Jordison.
Yeah.
Former drummer of Slipknot. He was actually one of the founders of Slipknot.
Yes.
Murder Dolls. He drummed for Ministry. He sat in and drummed for Metallica once.
He did. And honestly, like, I think they actually released, I think they released the footage from that show. But yeah, he was, that was a hell of a fill-in, by the way, because I think he was called in that night.
And I believe you and I had a little bit of discussion. The way Metallica works as opposed to most any other bands, typically, you know this, of course. I'll just be repeating some of the stuff we talked about. Mm-hmm. The drummer is the one who keeps the beat for the music.
Yep.
And other people follow the drummer. The drummer and the bass kind of work together for the back end, the beat, keeping things moving, and the guitarist and vocalist follow suit. Not in Metallica. In Metallica, the rhythm guitarist is the one who keeps the who basically keeps the beat and keeps the rhythm. That would be James Hetfield. And basically, Lars Ulrich follows James Hetfield.
Yeah.
And then everybody else follows that.
Yeah.
And so for other drummers trying to play with Metallica, it's a little bit weird because they're used to being the ones that keep the rhythm and keep the beat. And it sounds different because Lars plays in a way that's more he's following James as opposed to James following him, and it does make a difference in the sound. I guess it could be described as looser. It sounds looser and not as tight if it's done that way.
Yes.
Right? Would that be the right way to describe it?
You
being more the music oriented person, you being the music producer person.
Yeah. Well, most of the time with what you do, the drums are essentially the lead instrument in laying down the rhythm section. And then everybody else plays to the drums. It will sound looser because if the drums are following something else, then what happens is the meter gets lost because they're trying to follow that. The only thing that the drums can follow essentially that would help keep absolute time, if you want them to do that, is the click. But a lot of the time, if you omit the click, and omitting the click has been done for decades, it's not really that big of a deal as long as you have a decent amount of meter. Or, in the case of somebody like Lars, it is more the ebb and flow of the show happens because Lars is following something that's not a click. But that guy plays to a fucking click like mad. He's been playing to a click since Lightning. So he knows how a click feels.
He can, it's almost a sense of, There are maybe people who want to use that as more good of a drummer. And what I think it does, it shows an ability to, I can equate it to the acting world. And there are some people that can go out and deliver the exact on stage. Cause I only know the stage acting world really well. And I only know it so well as in comparison to others. There are those people who, when you're working with them on stage, they deliver their line the exact same way every single show. Mm-hmm. They hit their blocking the exact same every single show, and it happens the exact same way every single time they go out on stage. And those guys are great to have around because you know all the time what to expect from them. But some of the best scenes that I've had as an actor, especially the play I did just a couple of years ago when I got back out and did a play after years of not doing one. I had some scenes with people that that hit their mark and did their things the exact same every single scene. I had some scenes where people never got it right, regardless of any time, however many times we did the damn scene, and we had to figure out how to do it. And then I had two scenes with another actor. It was just me and him. And he's a pretty well-known actor in the area, pretty well-known at the theater that we worked at. He's done a lot of different things, typically has large or lead parts because he is he's a fairly good actor. Very good stage presence. But what was wonderful is we had the skeleton of each of these scenes. We had worked out a skeleton of the scenes. And a couple of rough beats, you know, where the joints are. But every single time we performed the scene, it was fleshed out a little bit differently. He moved a little bit differently. He emphasized things a little bit differently. And I had to be able to, work in concert with what he was doing, move around the stage to compensate for where he would move. Sometimes he would sit longer in the chair. Sometimes he would get up and move sooner. And so yeah. I just kept the same blocking. I'd be looking at a chair, talking to a chair when he's walked across the room. I had to react and move and do some changes. And instead of approaching the chair with the bag of money I was going to give him, I had to walk to the other side of stage to approach him to give him the bag of money and make sure that I was on the same level as him. We were both at the audience. There wasn't any upstaging going on. There wasn't any awkwardness happening. It was a good ebb and flow through the scene. And he wasn't trying to upstage me at any point. He was just feeling the scene,
right? And so you were supplementing that. That's essentially what.
And even when I would do something that was different than what my move was, he would compensate for that, and we had a good flow. And each time afterwards, after we did those scenes, it was like, that was good. That felt good tonight. That was a good back and forth. I loved it when you did this. Yeah, I like it when you did that. And
that's each time that sounds like a good jam. You know what I mean? Like a jam with good musicians. Or even people that may not have the same amount of experience. Man, if you stick with somebody else who has better experience with you, or you've learned how to communicate to that respect, it's not about no two musicians jamming together are in competition ever. They're never in competition.
It's about working together and having fun and it's
communication.
To flow with it. And it was a nice flow with him. Everything that we did together was a nice flow, and it felt really good working with him. And it's an improvisational ability that I think Lars has learned over the years with the live shows, to have that improvisational ability to work within what, like you say, the ebb and flow of the show, what it's feeling, how it's working, how the other people are playing. And that may make him an even better drummer than most people give him credit for. But
we've gone on and on about that.
What we need to get back to is the person that we're actually talking about, which is let me try to get it right. Joey Jordison.
Jordison. So no N in the middle. It's hard. I understand that because there's an N in his name, and it's kind of like, it's funny because then when you talk about like ministry or something like that, Al Jorgensen is is the guy who's the head of ministry, which Jordison played for.
Too many sons involved.
Yeah.
So anyway,
if you don't mind, I actually wanted to read something off the Wikipedia page I thought was really interesting. A couple of things.
Please do.
Speaking of which, I know we were talking about Lars for a minute, but I'm looking at Jordison's influences off the Wikipedia page. It says he described Lars Ulrich, Charlie Benante, and Dave Lombardo as having a considerable influence on his drumming. He also held Dale Crover from the Melvins in high esteem. However... Jordison cited, and this makes sense, just to kind of give you an idea of where he really came from, he cited Keith Moon, John Bonham, Gene Krupa, and Buddy Rich as his main influences. And all four of those drummers that are his main influences, all of them guided the entire band. They were in charge of the rhythm section. And that makes a huge... Yeah, these guys weren't supplemental. They were the show. And if you ever saw a Slipknot show... Jordison was the guy everybody was following all the way down the line.
And here's the thing. I did get a chance to see Slipknot perform years ago.
I think I was with you. Was that Ozfest?
That was Ozfest, yes.
They were fucking nuts.
There was a lot of weird bands that happened there. That was the year that they had the sideshow guides hammering nails into his nose.
Oh yeah,
That was the first time I saw Disturbed live, which is before they were my brothers, my sisters, my blood.
Oh my god, that's right. It just broke me about them.
This was the early years of Disturbed. Their first major album had been the only thing to come out, so there was a lot of going on.
Oh yeah, it was the sickness tour.
Disturbed was pretty good. Linkin Park back then was god awful, and it was sad because I really loved the album Hybrid Theory. You and I both loved that album back then.
Yeah,
and so they came on stage and they were awful. Papa Roach was there.
Oh my god, Crazy Town was at that show too, and they sucked.
I'm getting there.
Oh, sorry. Please continue.
Papa Roach was at that show, and Papa Roach was also awful, and they were kind of doing one of their first shows back in Northern California after kind of hitting it big, and they were completely awful. They were terrible that night, which was really bad for all the local fans.
Yeah.
And yes,
the only one I liked, that the only song I liked from them was the one that was on the Tony Hawk soundtrack, Blood Brothers. Good song.
Okay.
Good song. But like, I like any of the stuff that was on MTV with them. And so that's most of what you heard.
I was a Papa Roach fan.
Okay. They still played Blood Brothers though, and I thought that one was all right. But that was like the highlight of the entire show. For him, for them.
Yeah. My wife actually knew the guy that used to be one of their bus drivers.
Oh, so, cool.
Yeah, she never met the band personally, but she did know some people involved with the band.
Oh my gosh, why can't I think of his name?
Jacoby.
Kobe, yeah, I met Jacoby. Actually, his kid is an incredible drummer. I was working at a used music shop. God, that's 2001. It's like 10, 12 years ago. I was working at that store. It was a used music store called Music Go Round way back in the day. It was it had been there for 10, 20 years, and it closed down eventually. But he showed up, was just walking into the store, saying, "Hey," him, his wife, and his kid. And his kid can drum, but this was when his kid was like 8. And he could hold meter, and he was really good. And I was shocked. But yeah, that was that's like the only real memory I have of him. He was super chill. He was all right.
I wouldn't be shocked. Anytime people say they're shocked when a musician's kid is able to play music, it's like, it's kind of what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ingrained into, it's really.
Yeah, they've got it all over them.
From the beginning. So like, I'm sorry, when I see like, you know, teenage kids of what, Scott Weiland and Robert Trujillo and who else is teenage kid was in part of that band?
Weiland together Slash's kid was the drummer, I think.
Yeah, when you see kids like that form a band together, and people are like, "Yeah, look at these kids in a band." I'm like, "Yeah, their parents are like hardcore musicians. They've grown up being musicians."
Yeah,
it's not a stretch to see those people be musicians. It's kind of what they do.
Yeah, I mean, look at Eddie's kid. Good gravy! Yeah. That guy's incredible.
Wolfgang is one of my new favorites. But anyway,
absolutely.
Said that before.
Okay. Would you mind?
We're still straying from the point.
Yeah, we are. I would like to continue talking about Joey, if you don't mind. There was actually this really cool little paragraph about his touring stuff that I wanted to mention, and some details on Metallica stuff too.
Actually, that's what I wanted to add real quick, because we were originally talking about the Ozfest thing.
Yeah,
Slipknot was on this Ozfest, and I can say I've never been a Slipknot fan. I'm still not necessarily a Slipknot fan.
Understood.
It was never music that personally hit me. Mainly the vocals bother me. Corey Taylor, in my mind, he's wasting himself on the vocals for Slipknot, because he is a much better vocalist. However, he's not that good a songwriter, because his individual stuff, not so good. I'm wondering who writes the vocals for Stone Sour, because I like their vocal stuff. I like their lyrics. I don't like Corey Taylor's original music lyrics, and I don't like the Slipknot ones. Slipknot, it's not.
Stone Sour is Corey Taylor's passion project, but I think he keeps it to a specific style.
Yeah, it's
and
the
sometimes
better
yeah certain st- yeah I can under that I can understand that entirely. But, let me read a little bit about this stuff. We're talking over each other, man. I'm sorry.
Final thing about seeing them at Ozfest, I was impressed with Slipknot at Ozfest, just because of the fact you're going to get into the drum setup. The things that they do, first of all, there's not one drummer, there's multiple drummers, and the shit that they do on the drums in that band is freaking insane.
Oh, yes.
So you're going to talk about part of the setup. Go ahead. That actually leads.
Oh, yeah. The drum setup he had was just fucking massively crazy. He actually used to... I could see him saying stuff like, I'm surprised he didn't mention, oh, that's right, he grew up listening to Too Fast for Love and Shout at the Devil. So he was, Motley Crue was a huge influence, and that makes a huge, there's an epiphany there, because part of what Jordison used to do as part of the stage show with Slipknot, and one of the things that they had this vision for the most outlandish shit way back in the day, they signed with Roadrunner, and it sounds arrogant unless you realize what they were doing. When they signed with Roadrunner back in the day, and Roadrunner was a small label, they were the guys that they brought new metal to the surface. Roadrunner did. But Slipknot was one of the first major bands that they signed, because they're like, I remembered hearing about this early. They were just like, so how's it feel to sign the best band you're going to sign? We're going to put you on the map. And the reason why it was the case is because they had shit figured out on a club level. They were doing crazy shit. Absolutely crazy. And we're not just talking the masks. We're not talking, you know, fucking... We're not talking masks. We're not talking the kegs and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about there was full video and stage production on the level of high-grade Broadway, except with guys that are doing acrobatics where they're jumping and flipping off their own equipment and shit. It was insane what they were doing. But one of the big things that Joey did was he took a cue from from Tommy Lee. And Tommy Lee had himself set up back in the 80s. He had himself set up in a harness in his drum setup, where his drum setup would go up and it would like spin around and turn and shit. And Jordison pulled from that and did his own deal with it, playing way more complex shit upside down. Yep. Like where he would, I remembered seeing that drum riser lift up into the air, if you remember that, and turning on its on one side and spinning around in a circle while he is going batshit. Playing, and I'm talking like fucking...
And he's doing his drum thing while that's all happening, and it's
He's playing like, Gene Krupa licks. He's playing fucking Neil Peart licks, but he's doing it on a rig that Tommy Lee would have... Yeah.
And while he's doing that, there are like two or three other drummers playing other drum stuff. Like one guy's playing on what looks like freaking trash cans.
Yep.
Big barreled trash cans.
Yep.
There's multiple other drummers playing along and accompanying with him as he's spinning around doing his thing with his freaking race car chair that he's strapped to.
Yeah, it's fucking like, sensory overload, man.
Also, by the way, wearing a freaking mask.
Yeah. Yeah. Wearing a mask and a full prison jumpsuit. Like, yeah. Just so it's so good. Like the aesthetic of it. Tommy Lee, insane.
Tommy Lee will take you with your boxers and your stupid little headband and your microphone. We'll up that with the prison jumpsuit and the mask. Okay.
Right. Exactly. It really was a whole completely different experience. But yeah, I'd like to read some more about what he did on tour, because Slipknot wasn't the only band he was in. And we've mentioned a few of the other ones, but listen to this. It's actually one of my favorite stories. It's something that we mentioned earlier about the fill-in with Metallica. There's some backstory to this I wanted to actually put in. So on the Wikipedia page about the tour, it says, Jordison performed with other bands solely as a touring member. While preparing for Download Festival in 2004, Metallica drummer Lars Ulrich was hospitalized for an unknown illness. Metallica's vocalist James Hetfield searched amongst the other bands performing at the festival to find a replacement for Ulrich. Jordison, Fleming Larson, who was Ulrich's drum technician, and Dave Lombardo of Slayer volunteered. Jordison performed 8 of the 13 songs that made up the set and was called the band's hero of the day. Of course. In late 2004, Jordison performed with Satyricon on their tour of the United States, where drummer Frost was refused entry to the country. There was also, in 2006, Jordison joined Ministry for the Master Bay Tour. Master Bay Tour 2006, which consisted of 60 dates across the United States. He also appeared...
Let's make it clear here. The tour was called Master Bay. It was the Master Bay
Tour. No, it was the Master Batour.
Master Batour?
Master Batour.
But still.
And he was in the video for Lies, Lies, Lies. Korn recruited Jordison in 2007 to join them on tour when drummer David Silvera went on hiatus from the band. So this is, he was playing for Korn between David Silvera and Ray Luger, which they've never gone back from Ray Luger. Ray Luger is a fucking god. He's amazing. Not to discredit David Silvera, but Ray Luger just is fucking incredible. But the fact that they were like, oh, yeah, let's get Joey Jordison. Could you imagine Korn with Joey Jordison to see that shit live? That would be insane. I would love it.
That would be kind of crazy. And I have seen Korn live, and I feel sorry chest after every concert because he beats the shit out of himself with the microphone, especially with that specific microphone, the Geiger inspired microphone,
yes,
stand that he has. He just beats himself up with it.
Jordison is in the music video for Evolution with Korn. Okay. And when he was touring with Korn, he became the first musician to perform on 5 occasions at the Download Festival.
Nice.
He also toured with Rob Zombie after Tommy Kluftis quit. So he has played with, he's played with a ton of people. Let's see. Metallica, Satyricon, Ministry, Korn, Rob Zombie, and on top of his other bands, we're also looking at Murder Dolls. We're looking at Scar the Martyr. He was in those two as well. I don't know if he played with any other bands, but good gravy, dude. He did so much.
And again, was as one of the founding members of Slipknot.
Yes.
Brought that entire kind of, there was just something different about Slipknot, even within the metal scene of the early 2000s. It was a different kind of band, a different kind of sound.
Yeah.
It was in some ways a bridge between the kind of the new metal and some of the more heavier school metal, in that it had some of the emotional rawness that the new metal was trying to bring out, but some of the technical wizardry that you would find in some of the older style metal.
Yeah.
Some of the more traditional metal. It was a good bridging thing in between those. And then the fact that, honestly, probably the best hard rock metal band to ever come out of Iowa. I mean,
right?
Really, let's think about it. That's not, you don't go to Iowa to find a metal band.
No.
That's where a metal band came from, was frickin' Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. That's fantastic.
But it's, again, another loss to the music world. And then finally, in some ways, okay, here's the thing. Again, you're the music guy in here, but that doesn't mean that you are the one who is entirely about music appreciation. While you have a lot more of the technical knowledge of music, I have probably as much appreciation as you do for musical things. We share that love of music. And one of the things that I think we both love are bare bones bands. There's some bands that, like Slipknot, for instance, have, you know, 4 different drummers and, you know, 3 or 4 different guitarists and whatnot. And those are great. I'm not discounting those in any way, shape, or form. But damn, it's fun sometimes just to watch a band and you have a guitarist, a bassist, and a drummer, and that's it. Now, they may have supplemental instrumentalists for live shows and whatnot. But basically, the core of the band is this kind of power trio setup. Your guitarist, your bassist, your drummer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's even better than having the lead singer be somebody different. That trio of people is just like, you look back at like a band like Cream, who was just the epitome of let's each person wanting to outplay the other person. That was not a jam situation. That was not a get along with situation. That was each one wanted to be louder and better than the other person. And yes, it made it so the band did not last very long, but what music they did bring out was freaking amazing music, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There have been many of those over the year, many different bands with just those 3 people.
Yep.
Throughout different countries. Cream, very much I believe they're all British, right? Are they? Isn't Clapton British?
Yeah, all of them are. All of them are British, yeah. I believe.
They're all British. And there's another British one that's a more modern day one. People would Guilty Pleasure. I don't. I think they're an amazing group, and it's a trio that are some brilliant musicians that go beyond just using normal instruments and using electronic instruments built in to their normal instruments, and that would be the band Muse.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Amazing band. And what's nice is when you get those power trios, you often hear a lot more of one instrument than you typically hear in a lot of rock music.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the drums with the conversation we were just having, how the drums are the backbeat, the rhythm of the true rhythm of the song. But you forget about probably the most forgotten about role, I think, in most music. You forget about the bassist sometimes.
You do.
And a lot of times in these power trio groups, you hear a lot more bass than you would normally hear within. Because if you got two guitars playing, it's sometimes hard for the bass to get a little bit of edge in there. But when you have your guitarist as your lead singer, sometimes you have a little less guitar and you hear a little more of that bass coming through. That's one of the things I like about Muse. I would be remiss, by the way, if I did not mention the Canadian group that I believe is a power trio as well, that you happen to be a huge fan of.
Yes,
that
very
you also
much so.
Hear a crowd of bass in, even though the bass is the lead singer. The bassist is the lead singer. I would be remiss by not mentioning them. That would be Rush, of course.
Of course. Incredible power trio.
I'm sure if you ever had a van in your van, it would be all Rush all the time, right? movie quote and reference for anybody. If you don't know what movie it is, watch your comedy movies. Anyway, point being here, these bands can be very iconic. Well, I mentioned two from England, because Muse is from England and Cream is from England. I mentioned a Canadian one. If people don't know that Rush is Canadian, I don't know why you don't know that. You should learn more about music, because Rush is very Canadian.
Extremely.
Extremely. Like, their whole attitude is Canadian.
Oh, yes.
Like, they're just like, look at me. We're Canadian. We're gonna play some Tom Sawyer and eat some Timbits. Seriously. Have some Molson. Anyway, point being, there's probably one band that I would say for American rock music that was the epitome of the power trio. So much so, in fact, that, you know, we love referencing from when we're growing up. They actually have a cameo in what's considered one of the best movie series of all time as a band playing back in the Old West. You know that, right?
No.
Yes, sir. In the third Back to the Future movie, where they are back in the Old West of Hill Valley.
Yeah.
Right. The band playing at the little party that happens in the square when Doc dances with the school teacher, and you know, the Marty throws the pie plate that's made by Frisbee, and gets the Colt 45,
yeah,
from the gun sales guy. The band that's playing, if you remember, at one point they're playing acoustic instruments. At one point they actually spin their instruments before they start playing again, because the band playing during that sequence,
I didn't know that,
it's ZZ Top.
All ZZ Top
is ZZ Top has got to be the epitome of, first of all, the epitome of American rock bands to begin with. These are guys from freaking Texas. One of their biggest hit songs, that half of the song is a bunch of grunting. The how how how. Seriously, that song is about a whorehouse that was, yes, that was actually more popularized in the stage play and then movie Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. One of my favorite movies ever, period. Burt Reynolds, Dolly Parton, Jim Nabors. Sadly, I can't watch that movie anymore without crying because of personal reasons, but that is one of my favorite movies ever. If it is on, it is a musical, by the way. If it is on, I am singing along to every single freaking song at the top of my damn lungs. In fact, I will just start singing along to the songs just in my head, because it's such a great musical. I love that movie. One of my favorites. But it's talking about a real whorehouse that existed in Texas. The song LaGrange is about a real whorehouse that it was in LaGrange, Texas. So these are Texas boys through and through, and they are bare bones rock music. This is what rock is. A fusion of country, a fusion of jazz, a fusion of blues, all into this edgy thing where every band member is, again, they look as about as American as you can think, especially with their gigantic ass beards. Funny enough, two of them, the guitarist and the bassist, beards. The drummer, not a beard, but his last name is Beard, so technically he's still a beard.
Yeah,
I mean, yep. that's just how that band is.
Yeah,
and again, the only band I could think, or the performer I could think, that would be more American, like Bruce Springsteen or Bob Seger or something.
Right.
Screw that. These Texas boys are really what shows this is America. And they are, you know, well loved as a result. And
yeah.
Powerful. This just trio of musicians just puts out this amazing music. Sadly, the bassist for ZZ Top, what was his name again? Dusty
Hill.
Dusty, Dusty Hill.
Yes.
He'd been sick for a while and, in fact, had to bow out of their most recent tour.
Well, he had to bow out of a show. Well, okay, so technically what it was, he only backed out of a single show.
It was one single
show.
Were,
okay. Yeah, they were playing, they were still touring, they were doing their thing. But he was, he had, I think, he had to go for hip replacement surgery or something like that. Because, yes. I mean, guy was 72.
Yeah.
Like, pretty
up there. Yeah, up there.
Pretty up there. So, unfortunately, he had to bow out of a show, and they got their, they got their tech to replace him for a single show.
Which, by the way, I just want to do one real comment real quick. If you ever want the chance to play with your favorite band, try to figure out a way to learn about an instrument, become a tech for them.
Because you're just going to learn the songs after hearing them constantly.
Well, and you'll be doing some of the songs. You'll be doing the riffs and the notes and stuff in sound check to make sure that the instruments sound the way that they're supposed to. So you'll eventually learn how to play all the stuff. And then sometimes what happens is the guitarist who you're the tech for is skateboarding and breaks his arm.
Yep.
And he's also the lead singer of the band. So he can sing for the band, but he can't play the guitar anymore. So you get to play the guitar for the tour. For the rest of the tour, because they need to still do the tour because they have the legal obligation to do it. So he sings while he's in a cast and you play the guitar. Or it's also possible that your lead guitarist / lead vocalist steps into the pyro and burns half of his body and again has his body in a cast and can't play the guitar, but he can sing. So you end up playing the guitar for the rest of the tour
and he ends up singing. All of our rock stories like gravitate back to Metallica. I love that.
That's the thing is that's literally one band that had James Hetfield break his arm on a skateboard and not be able to play guitar and then step into pyro and burn half his body and not be able to play guitar. So one band, two different tours, the tech got to play the guitar for it. So it's always a possibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bass tech stepped in, played, and apparently, on his deathbed, Dusty Hill made it clear to, oh gosh, now I can't even think of his name, the guitarist.
Billy Gibbons.
Yes, Billy. Why can't I think of Billy's name? He made it clear to Billy that he believed that the band needed to go on. ZZ Top needed to continue with the bass tech taking the reins over for the bass, playing the bass for the band.
Actually, so, yeah, it's a pretty heartwarming kind of a deal with that. So it definitely...
Yeah, Billy went on to... he was on radio with... the Eddie Trunk, wasn't it?
He mentioned something on Trunk, and then he also said something on stage, because get this, they canceled a single show. So here's what happens. Dusty passes away, and they canceled a single show to mourn. That's it. They had another one that was scheduled 2 days later. And when Gibbons was on Eddie Trunk, he said, I got a quote here. Dusty emphatically grabbed my arm and said, "Give Elwood the bottom end and take it to the top." Now, and he said, "He meant it, amigo. He really did." So here's the deal. Elwood, who he's talking about, is their guitar tech. Elwood Francis is the guy's name and has now taken over bass for ZZ Top. Now, one of the biggest deals about ZZ Top is the fact that they are hands down still holding the record for the longest band in history that has never had a single lineup change. So they still have the longest record of no lineup changes. I think it's, they've been around since it's the same three guys since 1969. I think
it's been a long time. And they've been involved in so many different things. I mean, for
their first album came out in 71 and they've been doing stuff. Oh no, I'm sorry. ZZ Top was put together in 1969, and they released their first single.
Now, I love that they've been involved in other media stuff. Billy Gibbons was on the show Bones, as a guest part for many years as himself.
Yeah,
the father of one of the characters in the show.
Yeah,
and when that character was trying to get married to another one of the characters, he basically made that guy's life a living by being Billy Gibbons, including tattooing his face on the guy's arm.
Oh my God, he was. I just realized that. Was the entirety of ZZ Top in Mother Goose Rock and Rhyme, or was it just Dusty?
It was actually the entire, I was just going to mention that because Mother Goose Rock and Rhyme is one of my favorite gems that you can't find anywhere anymore. And I love that movie so much. they are the 3 men in a tub.
Oh my God. That's God. Yes. Fucking awesome. That's great. Yes.
For those of you who don't know the nursery rhyme, Rub-A-Dub-Dub, 3 men in a tub. That was them in the movie.
Oh my God. You can hear it. I've never heard it. You can hear it in your head what it would sound like.
Well, no. What's amazing is, of course, as the tub is moving down the river, they do the whole hand moving thing.
They do the point, the shark dressed fucking. Oh God!
Yeah, and they're moving the hand. Yeah, they do it. Yeah.
Ah, that's great.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no, that's the thing about them, man. They had such. It was this crazy. It was the characters that they developed for themselves were so huge, but the minimalism of their stage performance. Concentrated on their playing, the music is fantastic because it's so easy to wrap your head around, but it's also played extremely well. Yeah,
it's so good.
But however, their outlandishness from their stage show is like, you know, fireworks from the headstock and guitars covered in fur and fucking like it was.
I always wanted one of them furry guitars.
Oh, me too. They look great.
Always wanted one of them furry guitars.
And sometimes the show, like the show itself, wasn't a mess. Like I saw some stuff that they did on MTV with the fuzzy guitars and shit, and I'd seen, you know, when MTV did their party shit, it was always like pre-recorded or whatever, so it wasn't a big deal. So you could tell that they're absolutely not playing their song while they're playing, but they did that to everybody. They did it to Nirvana. They did it to fucking everyone, and everyone mocked it every time.
I want to mention that I mentioned the band Muse earlier. They were on they're British, so they do a lot of stuff in Europe. I think they were on a Spanish, like in Spain, a morning program in Spain where they were supposed to be performing, and the program wouldn't let them perform live. They wanted them to play to a recording, to mime to a recording. So they actually all switched instruments. And so they had the bassist on drums, I believe the singer and guitarist on bass, and then the drummer on guitar and lip syncing to everything. Yeah, they did it on purpose and did badly on purpose.
Oh yeah, I've seen some performances where it was a total shit show. You could tell they're not playing, but they're just having fun with it. Yeah,
They purposely did really bad. There was another performance where they had to do it on Italian TV, and halfway through the song they start breaking their guitars and the music's still going. And so yeah, because Muse is not the group to do that. But again, I wouldn't expect ZZ Top wouldn't have been, Nirvana wouldn't have been. They would have been like Kurt would have just kind of, he would have broken a guitar and just let the music keep playing.
Oh like, yeah, and they had done that too. They'd ruined a couple of performances where you could tell that they're not playing. Although the risk of actually allowing a musician or a band to play live, especially at European shows, because there's a lot less actual censorship, but there are some limits. You end up, you know, getting performances like, I don't know, Metallica saying they'll play King Nothing and then they turn around and play So What instead. On an award show at primetime TV. Have you ever seen that?
No, I need to.
What happened was they did it. They aired it and it was aired live and they're playing So What live on European television, UK television. And then every subsequent afterwards, there was technical difficulties. They like had to recover from the show. They got fined, I think, from the company that put the show together because they ruined that shit. And then afterwards, they did re-airings, and they removed the Metallica performance entirely because they couldn't keep airing it. But I know that the canceled footage was actually, removed footage eventually made it to YouTube, so you can find it.
I'm about to find it.
Yeah, Metallica playing So What live. Dude, you're seeing reactions in the audience like, oh, fuck, what the hell is happening? Like, what are we gonna do? So I can imagine being there
like or like tuning in with my parents to watch, right, back in the day, especially because they were gonna be doing King Nothing, so that was back in the late 90s. I could be imagine tuning in with my parents and like, oh, they're gonna be doing King Nothing. My parents are like, oh, okay, fine, we'll sit here and watch your stupid little Metallica song.
And then
I hear bow in and out, bow in and out, bow in and out. Oh crap.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic.
This is not one my parents need to hear.
So, oh my gosh, getting back on.
What did he just say? What did he just say? You boring little cunt. Is that what he said? No.
It was a boring little hunt.
It was a boring little hunt. They were going after deer. Yes. Yes, it was a boring little hunt.
Did he say he sucked an old man's cock?
No, he drove around the block. That's what he said. He drove around the block.
Oh my goodness.
And then your drunk uncle sitting on the edge of the couch. Yeah, I fucked a sheep once too. Anyway, moving
Mom,
on.
Mom, what's jacking up?
Anyway, so yes, back to the original point.
Funny enough that you mentioned Billy Gibbons earlier, actually, because yes. Billy Gibbons being related to one of the characters in Bones. Funny enough, Dusty Hill actually had a cameo in King of the Hill, and he was actually he's Dusty's cousin. Hank Hill is Hill's cousin in King of the Hill, which makes sense.
Nice.
Yeah. So nice. they were beautifully meta, and like I said, man, ZZ Top for the longest time have just been incredible personalities in media. They've always been fun. You always see what they did, what they did with a smile on your face. Every time it brought a smile on your face. He was also on the Drew Carey Show. He played himself. There was a, I don't know if you ever saw this, Drew Carey holds auditions for a band out in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you ever seen that? Dude, Dave Mustaine is there and they don't get him, and Joe Walsh, and they don't like him, and Dusty Hill shows up and they said they really liked how he played, but they didn't like his beard. And he's like, I don't know, man, I can't get rid of my Texas goatee. Like, yeah. it's good shit.
And as a former beard haver, because I don't have a beard anymore, I had to shave it. Well, I didn't have to; I chose to for marketability purposes for jobs. But that's a beard game that is winning the game. Period. Hands down. The ZZ Top beard game. You just don't compete with that thing. That thing is fantastically amazing, and I could never grow a beard like that. I could never hope for a beard like that. I'm pretty sure they popped out of the womb like that. They had to have. But again, this is a great loss to the music world.
Yeah.
But in the sense that he does have somebody to already take the mantle and to keep the band going, we don't necessarily have to see this one as much of a loss as look at the beautiful music that he was able to help bring to us, and the fact that there is the legacy in place to keep that beautiful music coming forward. That's kind of nice.
The fact that his replacement's name is Elwood Francis,
I mean, that's kind of
badass.
Nice.
that's wonderful.
That's about as Texas as you're going to get. Yeah. maybe a little Joliet thrown in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Joliet thrown in there. But anyway, so these again are the people that we've kind of, the musicians that we've kind of lost. All this adding up to one hell of a band, whatever afterlife there is.
Yeah.
Because damn, that band would be a hell of a thing to watch.
Definitely.
But anyway, I think that's what we have for this week. So thank you all for listening. Mike, where are people listening to us?
Well, you could be listening to us on our website, thezenchronicles.com or zenchron.com. That's spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. You could also be listening to us actually on YouTube or any other. I'm sorry, I skipped YouTube. Many of the other podcast websites. So go search us in your favorite podcast app, and we should be there. And if we're not, go find us in another one or just go to the website. But you could also head to YouTube, by the way, and check us out there. We are available on YouTube. All of our podcasts are uploaded in video format. Now, there's no cameras. There's no video yet. Eventually, there will be. We're working the technicals on that. We're getting the technical figured out.
Basically, we're just trying to figure out when James can reroute the internet to the room that that he does the podcast in, so that he can have a direct hard line into the internet so that you can get proper video as opposed to Wi-Fi internet video.
Exactly.
That's basically what we're waiting on.
Yeah, we're working on that part, and once we get that, we'll be able to get that part down. But that aside, we've also got, check our YouTube page. Make sure if you are listening on our YouTube page, hell, even if you're not, go to our YouTube page. Make sure if you're listening to this on video on YouTube, hit the like button. And also, go subscribe to our channel as well, because the next podcast we have up, it's going to show up on YouTube. You're going to get the notification. You're going to go see it there.
But hold on a second.
Oh, what?
They won't get the notification if they're just subscribed to it.
Oh no! You know, wait. What else? Is there something else they have to do?
They have to do something else, because you can subscribe, and that's great. That works for us because it gets us numbers, and eventually, hopefully, we get enough subscribers to get our own custom URL, which apparently Mike says is an important thing.
It is.
But to get actually notified, there's something else that they have to do. Do you remember what that is, Mike?
I
know what it is.
You know what it is?
I know what it is.
Man, my memory is failing me. I might have to be...
over me, damn it.
I'm sorry.
I can tell you what it is.
What
you
is
want
it?
Me to tell you?
Yeah.
I'll tell you now.
Tell me now.
Click the bell.
Click the bell. That's right. Make sure you click the bell. Get notified the next time you actually put one of these out. That bell is the secret ingredient for you knowing, so that when we put it out, you can then listen to us right there. There'd be a little click of a link when you get on your phone and you click it and it starts playing. And it's awesome.
Mike. You either need more coffee or less coffee. I'm not sure which one it is. Anyway, while you're on YouTube doing that, while you're subscribing, clicking the bell, all those wonderful things, be sure to check out Mike's other two pages, where I'm sure he's a lot more loquacious than he is on here. Those would be his Ruling Note Music page, where he talks about everything music. Yes, I know we talked a lot about music here, but he goes more in depth with music stuff on Ruling Note Music.
Yeah.
And then, of course, his Chronosode Games page, where him and his wife attempt to play video games supposedly in chronological order. They've been working through some weird game I don't know the name of, and different versions of the Zelda games. So please go check those out. Like those, subscribe those, click the bell on those so that you get notified when new things come out. Let's keep it all in the family and keep all the media going forward. Anyway, thank you all for listening to us today, and we'll be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues.